The Speakeasy Podcast Network.
Men of Letters, a supernatural podcast.
This is Dad's single most valuable possession. Everything he knows about every evil thing is in here. He's passed it on to us. I think he wants us to pick up where he left off. You know, saving people, hunting things, the family business.
Storm's coming. You boys, your daddy, you are smack in the middle of it.
House rules, Sammy. Driver picks the music. Shotgun shuts his cake hole.
No chick flick moments.
All right, jerk.
Bitch.
That Constance chick, what a bitch!
Or you think it's shooting Casper in the face, you freak.
Eat me. No, wait, you actually might.
Hope your apple pie is freaking worth it!
Welcome back and happy new year, and welcome to... Welcome back and happy new year, and welcome to spring. It's April! And we're back after a little time off since our December recording. We're your hosts, Tim and Katie. This morning we'll be covering episode 17, Hell House, and episode 18, Something Wicked. But first, let's talk about the news that broke on March 22nd. But it's better to hear it from the horse's mouth, so we'll be right back after this.
Speed.
Hey guys, Jared, Jensen, and Misha here, and we have some big news that we wanted y'all to hear from us.
We just told the crew that though we're very, very excited about moving into our 15th season, mm-hmm. It will be our last. 15 years of a show that has certainly changed my life. I know it's changed these two guys' life. And we just wanted you to hear from us that though we're excited about next year, it will be the finale, the big grand finale of an institution.
Yeah, we've cried some tears and we'll cry some more.
But we're going to save the emotion for next season.
Grateful, yeah. And we'll work all the emotion in the next season.
We talked about this in advance. We're like, let's not get emotional about it. Let's just try to be cool.
He's hanging on for dear life, I know him.
We love you guys, and this family is not going anywhere, even though the show will come to an end.
I will say this, a little word from Mr. Eric Kripke, the creator of this world and these characters, that in a show about family, it is amazing, and it is the pride of his life that it became family. So thank you guys for that.
Thank you.
Okay, Katie, what are your thoughts and feelings on the clip that we just played?
It's a little bit heartbreaking. Because, you know, it's like you grow up with these characters and they're just, like, make a big impact, I think, on your life in some way. And the great storytelling and stuff, and it's going to be missed, I think, by a lot of people.
Oh, for sure.
How about you? I mean, are you all emotional there?
Yeah, I'll wait till you're done yawning. Yes, I, you know, honestly, I'm thankful for the longevity of the show. And I remember being at the Supernatural convention like 4 years ago in Chicago and listening to and having conversation with other diehard fans. And some were like, oh my God, it has to go on forever. I'll just die without them. Yada, yada, yada. I was like, can't you just be thankful that the show has been around this long? And I believe it was entering its 12th season at the time. I'm like, so while I'm sad, but I'm also happy that the show is going out on its own terms and getting a full final season, like 20 or 22 episodes, and not an abbreviated season like Chuck. They got 8 episodes for their final season, and that felt really rushed, and now they can really take the time and make it very good.
Right.
So, after talking to Mark from Sequel This a while ago, in this day and age, it's never really goodbye. We've got limited runs and reboots of shows like Will and Grace and X-Files and Murphy Brown, to name a few, and Roseanne or the Connors now. So it's never really truly goodbye. It's just maybe see you later.
Yeah.
And I honestly feel that the guys have earned some time off. They've done this.
Yeah, and that's what it is. It's like this has been their lives for, you know, like 15 years of their lives. Like, they grew up on this show, and they all have families and stuff. And then what is Dean got he's got a restaurant bar down in Texas now. It's just like
the family business,
Yeah, their time. It's their time too. It's their time to chill out and just take a break.
And they all have young kids. It's like I think I was reading that Jared Padalecki has three kids. One is 7, one is 5, and one is 2. So I was like, he just wants to enjoy his kids and watch them grow up and not have to be in Vancouver 9 months out of the year and then doing the convention circuit every other weekend. And while I loved meeting them, I'm like, it's a lot. It's a lot of traveling. They're burnt.
Very demanding.
Oh, yeah. And I know that they're sad to see it go, and they grew up on the show, like you said. And for Jared, he met his wife. They fell in love. Jared and Jensen got married fell in love and got married behind the scenes on the show. And you know, so it's a nice way to move on. And honestly, we always have the DVDs. You'll have Netflix. You'll have TNT. You'll have whatever streaming service you use to watch it. So, and plus you have this show. So they're never really gone.
No, this is going to take us forever to get control of, too.
Especially the way we record, yes.
I know, right? We'll be talking about it forever.
Yeah, we started this about a year ago, and we're almost done with season one.
I know, right? Oh my god, we're so slow.
Yes, but I think, honestly, do you have anything else you'd like to add?
No, I just really, you know, it's so nice just to see them going, like you said, on their own terms. And I know that, like, Cass has his own kind of thing going on with Gishwiz, and he does so much work, you know, for good causes. It's like, I don't feel like it's really gone. It's just, you know.
Yeah, I mean.
I feel like in some way it might, you know, you'll see, like, little offshoots or something that'll be around for a while, even though it's not around.
Yeah.
You know?
I'd say honestly, after this season, give it about 2 to 3 years, and they'll probably do maybe a movie or a limited, like maybe 6-episode run.
Yeah, something like. I feel like it's not. Deep down in my heart, I feel like I'm not worried. You know, it's sad. Like I'm bummed out, but it's like, you know, there's other stuff out there for me as a viewer to explore and to see and. You know, and to appreciate their own lives. And I mean, you know, I can always watch. My kids love this show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and even like my youngest, she just turned 9. So it's like now she's really interested in this show. And like I get to watch it again with her. Yeah. Like when I was rewatching for these episodes, she's all like, why are you going fast through the show, Mom? I'm like, well, I want to make sure that I have time with Tim. And she's like, but I want to see that.
That's awesome. Sorry. Yeah, this show is going to last. It'll probably be talked about for many years to come.
Yeah,
it does. So with that, I think it's time to pause for our first Speakeasy Podcast Network commercial break from Sequel This, and then we'll roll the trailer, the WB CW commercial trailer for Hell House, and we'll be right back after this, guys.
Hi, this is Mark.
And this is Dave.
Okay.
What?
What do you mean, what? Why do you sound slutty?
I was trying something new. You didn't like it?
No. No, I did not. Did you think it sounded good?
And this is Dave.
Boy. Alright, we're from Sequel This, a show where we attempt to write sequels to some of your favorite movies, such as Ghostbusters 3, Goonies 2, and Gremlins 3.
Well, you can check out all of our shows over at sequelthis.podbean.com. We're on Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, all the major pod places.
And if you can't find an episode that interests you, or you have a great suggestion, or a pitch yourself, we want to hear it from you. So please, email us at sequelthis@gmail.com and drop us a line.
And remember to flash it out.
What's wrong with you?
Everything and nothing.
Thursday. Thursday, Supernatural is back with fresh episodes. They believe what others deny.
Gee, the damn thing is coming!
What others fear.
This thing is just getting started.
The journey continues to the spectacular season finale. Fresh Supernatural on its new night, the WB Thursday.
Okay, well, we are covering episode 17, Hell House, directed by Chris Long, written by Trey Calloway, with an original air date of March 30th, 2006. Jesus, that's old.
That is old. Andrew was just born.
As a prank, teens spread the word that a local house is haunted by the ghost of Mordecai Murdoch, a man who had reportedly killed his six daughters during the 1930s, and it ends up listed on an urban legends website, Hellhound's Lair. When it soon appears that the house is actually haunted, the brothers head to Richardson, Texas to investigate, and they run into a paranormal investigators Ed Zedmore and Harry Spangler, owners of the website. Although their research shows no truth in the legend, the brothers nevertheless encounter the spirit. But it is different from what the legend describes. When Sam and Dean realize that Mordecai's origins on Hellhound's Lair has also changed, they theorize that the spirit is actually a tulpa brought on by a Tibetan spirit sigil painted by the teens as a joke, with the beliefs of the website visitors causing the story to become a reality. The brothers trick Ed and Harry into posting a vulnerability for Mordecai onto their website and later return to the house to kill him. However, Ed and Harry are also there and reveal the website's server crashed. With the tulpa unaffected, Dean decides to burn down the house to stop the entity. Ed and Harry would later be rechristened as Ghostfacers and reappear in multiple episodes, but this marked their first appearance in the series. So let's discuss Hell House. What were your thoughts and feelings, Katie?
My thoughts and I like when you ask about my feelings.
Your feelings. What are your feelings?
I don't have any feelings. Don't you know that?
Do you have any thoughts?
I do have thoughts. Most of them are inappropriate, but you know, whatever. I don't know. I kind of liked the episode. It was like, I don't know. It was like a good, like a good little, like a spooky show, but it would have, you know, they just have lots of quippy, snarky things in it, and it's, I don't know, I just really, I liked it. I thought it was a good one.
Yeah.
I don't know, how about you? What did you think?
My thoughts and feelings? Yeah, I really enjoyed this episode. And when it first aired, I was like, yeah, it's okay. It's not as good as the other ones I've seen, but it was decent. But now as I've been rewatching this episode the last few times, I really enjoy it because I love the brothers' dynamic. They show them on the road, they show them doing practical jokes, and you get more of a sense that obviously they've done this before to help pass the time. And I really, really love that. And there were some really great, like you mentioned, quips, especially with where they're doing research or in the motel room, like they are most episodes, on their laptops and whatnot. And he's like, "It's a tulpa, but so if everybody believes in this thing, why isn't Santa real? why aren't I getting hooked up at Christmas?" And then Sammy returns, like, "Because you're a bad person, Dean."
I know, right?
It's just
a lighthearted sibling thing.
It's just those little like 1-2 jabs. It just really just to the funny bone that just really make that like worthwhile to me. And then when you know the playing of the music, too loud for Dean when he turns on the car, and it
right,
scares
like that crazy salsa music.
Right, right, the mariachi music, and the super gluing Dean's hand to the beer. Oh God! It's just so many good things, but as we open up at the beginning of the episode where the teens are going into the house, I really liked it. It was very dark and dreary. I really liked that they still sucked the light out of the filming, so
yeah,
to give it that more of an eerie feel to it. And obviously,
yeah, and everything looked super damp.
Exactly.
And, like, moist. Everything was like drippy looking.
Ooh, moist. I like that word.
I know. I know that's your favorite word.
It is. I love people that they don't like the word moist. It's just
I know, right?
Moist. Okay. Anyway, and then and obviously we meet Ed and Harry for the first time, and I really do love those guys. They are hilarious. And in fact, there's a scene where Dean and Sam are pulling up to the trailer. And they come out of the trailer, and Dean remarks, "Oh, look at action figures in original packaging."
I these two guys, because I don't know, like, I don't know really anything about them, and, like, as far as their acting career or whatever, I've only seen them on this show, but they play these two nerd idiots, like, so well. It's just, like, they really bring these characters to life.
Oh, yeah, and Ed and Harry have a few good lines, too, in some of the scenes they share together, and they're, like, and they're sitting together, like, what would Buffy do?
Right?
And he's like, you know what this could mean? This could mean fame, fortune, and sex with girls. Real girls.
Right?
I mean,
what are you doing in your spare time there, pal?
So funny. These guys just are funny. Funny. It's so funny. But anyway, so these kids enter the house, these group of kids, rando kids, just before they do the intro, right after the intro, I believe, of the episode.
Yeah.
And obviously, what they find, a dead girl hanging from the rafters. And then we cut to the boys traveling down the road, and they interviewing the teenagers,
Well, like, the one part I really like is they're driving in the car, and, like, you know, Dean looks at Sam and he's sleeping, mm-hmm. and he, like, sticks a plastic spoon in his mouth.
Right.
And then he, like, takes a picture and cranks up the music super loud.
Right. What really kind of dates the episode is that Dean's got a flip phone, a Razor flip phone.
Oh, my God, right?
I'm like, oh, my God. Well, I haven't seen those for about 10 years, 12 years.
I actually have one in my house that my kid's using.
Yeah, Chris actually has one that Nate, my son, was running around playing with, and it's very dog-eared because our dog Bubbles, when she was a puppy, she found Christina's phone and started chewing on, so there's like teeth marks in the razor.
Nice.
Oh, but yeah, so they get there, and I think Sam makes mention that where do kids go to hang out? We can interview them at a local. Like a drive-in, like not a drive-in, but a local, like a burger shack.
Yeah, it says drive-in on the place. So right. That's not wrong, but yeah.
But and it's weird because it totally that vibe, that scene that the exterior that they use for the burger place, totally made it feel like a 1950s or 60s McDonald's.
Right.
I thought that was very cool, and each kid has a very different theory of what they saw. From the different hair color of the woman to what they saw in the house. I just thought that was really cool. So what did you think?
Oh, no, I really liked it. I mean, when they were going, so they drive up to the place and they're going between each kid and she's like, and her red hair and her blonde hair and her brown hair. And then like the kid behind the counter with the little paper cap on.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, she was kind of hot.
For a dead girl.
Like, what? But yeah, I think that like that whole setting is very typical of like small town USA. Right. So I mean, I really liked how that was portrayed, and you know how kids can't keep their shit straight because they're all morons. You know, so I like that was like a good scene. I thought.
Yeah, and then you get the mastermind of it all. I forget.
Oh yeah, everybody was like Craig.
Yeah, Craig took us to the house, and then they find Craig. He's working at like this secondhand record store, or just a record or CD, a music store, and he's like, man, I don't even know what the hell to think of it, man. All I know is I'm never going back. I mean, he's, as the show unfolds, we find that Craig is full of shit.
Yeah, right? Because he tells him this whole story about the farmer and the sick daughter and how, you know, he would string up the girls and then he hung himself, and now all the girls hang, you know, he hangs all the girls that come in, and you know, oh, he heard it from the cousin, but, you know, he doesn't know where she heard it from.
Yeah, so. She was on break from college, Dana. Dana was his sister or whatever. And they were just, you know, hanging out. And then as we continue to find out, it was Craig and his sister Dana. They were bored. They decided to paint a bunch of symbols, not knowing what anything was from like her theology textbooks and things. And they end up writing that or drawing a sigil, which is a Tibetan, basically helps with Tibetan thought form, like I mentioned in the synopsis, which was brought to us by the wonderful people at Wikipedia, by the way. I did not write that. But,
well, yeah, and then, so, like, I mean, and then the boys, like, they know, like, they're like, what is this, and what is this, and they see that one thing with, it's like, It looks like a cross, kind of, but it has a dot in the middle and then a hook on the bottom.
And it was driving.
They're like, yeah, this looks so familiar. And yeah. Even Sam was looking up at this one symbol, and he's like, this didn't even show up until the 60s, you know? And this is where Dean says, no wonder you never get laid.
Yes, yes. And after all that time and effort researching, they go back to the record store, and he's like, Dean has this, it doesn't, this symbol means nothing. It's the logo for Blue Oyster Cult.
Yeah, right?
So then they realize, that's when they find that Craig is, like, full of shit. And so they go in there, and then they run into Ed and Harry, there you go. And they also run into the cops, because the cops have closed it down because of not the Dana's murder, but there's another murder of a young girl who had just gotten a full ride to a local college, I believe.
And they say how it doesn't make any sense because she's so smart, she had a lot going for her, and so they don't know why she would do that. But
so what Sam and Dean originally blew off is, you know, a kid's prank and nothing. They said, well, okay, well, there's obviously more to the story. Let's keep investigating. Let's keep going and see what happens. So they run into Ed and Harry. Ed and Harry tell... I love how Ed and Harry try to tell Sam and Dean about how they're professionals.
Right, like, this is EMF. Oh, well, what's EMF? Like, they play all dumb and stuff because these two idiots are like... Like, cocky, like they know what's up.
Yeah. And then as he goes, why don't you leave this to the professional boys?
Yes.
And they walk away, and you're like, I'm sorry, man. The pot gives me the giggles. Jesus Christ. I'm like, these guys are total morons.
And I think, like, their characters is what makes really the episode so good.
Yeah, it really does. It really does. And I love that the fact that to get the boys arrested or get them away from the house, Dean sees them and he sees the police officers, walking the perimeter. And he goes, "Who are you gonna call?" And then they run away.
Yeah, right.
And that's a Ghostbuster reference for all you youngins out there.
Well, yeah, because what do they call themselves? Spangler. And what was the other one?
Ed and Spangler, and I think it's Zedmore. Ed and Harry. I believe I'm going to look at the, Ed Zedmore and Harry Spangler. So
yes, like, really?
Yeah.
That's how you know they're nerds.
Yeah, so.
Like, I love Ghostbusters and everything, but still.
Yeah. So the guys go in there, and they realize that, obviously they can't kill the thing because the lore has changed.
Mm-hmm.
So they feed the false information to Ed and Harry. Ed and Harry upload that, but the server crashes, like we mentioned, again, previously mentioned in the synopsis. And so their bullets, their weapons they use don't work, so Dean has to improvise and burn the house down.
Yeah, because they had told them that it was like, oh, he killed himself with, like, these special iron rounds, and, you know, that's what they kind of feed those to. The boys feed those to these kids who will put it up on the website. So,
right.
You know, Spangler and Zedmore are like, whoa.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even work.
Right. So, and then Sam makes a very good point at the end where Dean, after he burns down the house and you see Mordecai just kind of vanish or burn up, his spirit, he's like, well, what happens if the lore changes again? Mordecai can't haunt a house that's not there anymore.
Right. The sigils actually, like, burn up with the house. So right. That's, like, my thinking about it anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Then Dean said, well, we'll come back and we'll get it done, too.
Yeah.
So, for me, I give this episode a thumbs up. I really do enjoy it a lot. A lot of people actually on the Internet Movie Database agree, too, because out of 10 possible stars, it's gotten 8.5.
And that's, I think, it really holds up, and, I mean, it's funny, and it's kind of scary at the same time, and it's good. I like the episode. I mean, in the ending, where they kind of, like, tell these, you know, Ed and Harry that, oh, yeah, they, you know, we got this big movie deal, we got this, and they pack up, like, their, what is it, like a gremlin or something?
Yeah, I don't know how a gremlin's going to tow a trailer, like an actual trailer, but yeah.
Because right? I'm pretty sure, like, the back axle would break.
Yeah.
But anyways, they pack up their shit. And they're
heading out to La La Land.
Yeah. And so it's funny that, like, and I forget if it was Sam or Dean that, like, made the call to fool them.
Yeah, Sam made the call and made the prank phone call to the boys, telling them that they want him to write the script for their for a TV show or for a movie deal,
right.
and then Dean's like, yeah, and I put the dead fish in their back seat, and they just walk away.
Right.
But there was one prank that you probably enjoyed very much, and I know a lot of ladies do too, where Sam is in the shower and then Dean sprinkles the itching powder in Sam's clothes. And,
oh my gosh.
And then you see, you know, Mr. Padalecki walk out of the shower and he's just got a robe on and, you know, his chiseled abs are glistening.
Somebody's jealous.
I am a little jelly because I don't. And a little jelly. I'm a little jealous and jelly.
You're a little jelly and a little. I'm a lot of jelly. It's okay.
But
I've come to the point where I realize, like, you know, you can't have everything you want.
Yes.
What is it like your mom said when you were a kid in the store? Look, but don't touch.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Oh, but I love that. And then they're at the restaurant. And he goes, Dean, did we switch detergents or something? He starts itching. He's like, Dean, you know, you're a real jerk.
Yeah, right.
And just walk away. But anyway, so final thoughts. I give it a thumbs up. I really enjoyed the episode. You two
agreed, definitely.
Awesome. Well, that brings us to the classical music used in the episode, and there was 8. One was Fire of Unknown Origin by BOC, Blue Oyster Cult. Number 2 is Jaded Little Love Song by Tamarara. I believe that's how you play it, or how you say it. Tamarama? Anyway.
It sounds good.
Yeah. I'm Burning for You by Blue Oyster Cult, and that was played twice, once at the end. Slow Death by Zach Tempest and Extreme Music. Anthem, also played by Zach Tempest and Extreme Music. Point of No Return by Rex Hobart and Misery Boys, and Fast Train Down by the Waco Brothers. And I just have 4 quick little fun facts about this episode. Number 1, the episode takes place in Richardson, Texas, which is Jensen Ackles, which is Dean's hometown. Number 2, the album that Dean picks up and seems to be impressed with in the record shop is Kansas, classic Point of No Return. That's the one that has its title song, Dust in the Wind. Number 3, when Sam and Dean visit the paranormal investigator nerds at their trailer, there are several witty bumper stickers pasted on the door. The biggest one reads, Step into the Light, Carol Ann. This is a reference to Poltergeist. Zelda Rubinstein says it to Heather Rourke's, who plays the haunted child, Carol Ann. To meet the demands of numerous fans to see the lead actors with less clothes on, a shirtless scene for Jared Padalecki was deliberately written into this episode, which we just talked about. And that's all I have, Katie. Any final comments?
No.
Okay. Well,
you did a good job.
Awesome. Well, it's time to jump back in the old Impala and leave the Texas town of Richardson in the dust. The boys travel to Fitchburg, Wisconsin, which is roughly 972.8 miles away from each other and would take about 14 hours and 52 minutes to drive. Thanks, Google. All right. But first, let's pause for our final Speakeasy Network commercial break from JDP, and then we will roll that WBCW commercial trailer for Something Wicked. We'll be back after this.
Hey guys, what are you doing?
Sit down, man. Crack a beer. I'm just telling Feeler about how Vlad the Impaler used to shove steaks up donkeys' asses.
Dude, this dude is so fucking gross, but it's so fucking awesome.
It sure is, buddy.
If you want to learn about everything from Vlad the Impaler to anime to rap feuds, join us here at the Junk Drawer Podcast.
That's right. Crack a beer, learn a little, and we'll talk about
our junk!
Yeah, we're going to do that.
You can find us at thedrunkdrawerpod.podbean.com and at thespeakeasypodcastnetwork.tumblr.com. Also, we're on iTunes, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Junk Drawer.
Now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. The angels watch me through the night. You keep me safe till morning light.
Sometimes nightmares are real.
Fresh Supernatural, next week on the WB Thursday.
Okay, Katie, why don't you take it away?
Okay, so Something Wicked is the next episode. It's directed by Whitney Rancic, written by Daniel Knauf, I think it said. The original air date is April 6, 2006. On a tip from their father, Sam and Dean head to Fitchburg, Wisconsin, to investigate a case in which children have fallen into comas. They soon discover that the creature responsible is a vampiric witch known as Estrega, which is stealing life force from the kids. Dean reveals to Sam that their father had previously attempted to kill the creature when they were young, and Dean's recklessness almost cost Sam his life and allowed the Estrega to escape. As the Estrega can only be killed while feeding, Sam and Dean convince the son of a motel owner whose brother was a victim to help them lay a trap. Though the trap fails and Sam is nearly killed, Dean is able to kill the Estrega in the end. The children's life force returns to them with the Estrega's death, and they recover, though Sam bemoans the loss of innocence of the boy who helped them. So, what do you think? What do you think, Tim?
It was an okay episode. It wasn't my favorite, but it was good. What did you think?
I liked it. It wasn't like... It wasn't amazing, but it wasn't terrible. You know, I think it was it was mediocre at best.
Yeah. I mean,
go ahead.
No, I would say it wasn't it wasn't the worst outing, but it's... Honestly, it was just kind of, in my opinion, just a little bit forgettable. I mean, I did like the fact that we got to see Sam and Dean as kids, and the flashbacks, and when we get to see John talking to both Sam and Dean. But I don't know. I like the idea of having the Estrega there and sucking life force out of kids. I really can't put my finger on. Why it was a decent episode, but it could have been a really great one. And I wish I had more insight on how to make it better.
One of my things with it was that I did appreciate the way they kind of jump backed in history, and there was a lot of flashbacking of, like, you know, you really get to see how Gene was responsible for Sam and how he was kind of had to be like the parent in a sense. With, like, making him dinners, and, like, you see that Dean has had to sacrifice, like, the one bowl of cereal that he wanted.
Yeah, the Lucky Charms.
For his brother. Like, those little things like that. It's like you see how the pressure has kind of made Dean who he is. So it kind of gave, you know, in that sense, you got a feeling of what Dean had gone through as a kid more than what Sam had been through. Because he was so small, you know, he didn't... I don't think Sam really recognized what an integral part that Dean had played in his upbringing.
Right, and we do see that we get the distinct feeling that through the way Dean, the older Dean was definitely more responsible for Sammy, but how Sammy was kind of kept in the dark for as long as possible on what their father does, and we've touched upon that before, or we'll be touching upon it again in another future episode where they do more flashbacks, and we see the Sam and Dean together in the hotel rooms as kids, whether dad's out on a hunt, or whatever Sam thinks his dad does. Because there's an episode where they're in a similar hotel room, and Sam actually poses that question to Dean's character, and Dean says, well, why do we have to move around so much, Dean? And it's because everybody finds you annoying, Sam. We have to leave a lot. So it's those little things that I really like. What I did like about this show is when the boys first rolled into the town, they pull up on a schoolyard playground, and he's like, Dean, what's wrong with this picture? And Dean's like, I don't know. He's like, well, it's a Monday or Tuesday, and it's like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. You're like, the school should be like teeming with life and with kids running around and the playground and going to buses and, you know, just living life. And there's a woman on a bench, and she says that a lot of the kids are sick.
Yeah.
And
it was like leading up to this, like they didn't, Dean's like, we got to go there. Dad sent us the coordinates, and Sammy's all kind of like second guessing him and stuff, and you know, he's like, well, I looked and I searched and it's a big steaming pile of nothing,
right?
And you know, and Dean is like, well, I'm the oldest and I'm always right. So you know, you see that like Sammy doesn't really have any interest in doing any of this, but then he's the first one to notice that, okay, well, where are these kids?
Right. and it turned. And then I believe you touched upon it just a few minutes ago when Dean is talking to Sammy. He goes, "Why does this case mean so much to you?" And then I think Dean like reveals to him through the flashbacks that Dad sent me here because this is kind of like. This is his mission to take out this thing that he couldn't take out when he was 12 years old or 10 years old or however old he was in the flashback because he left Sam. It was his responsibility. He wasn't supposed to leave the hotel room, but after a couple of days, he was just itching to do something other than stay inside. So I think he went
right.
to...
Right, he came here.
Yeah, and he didn't even go very far. He just went to the lobby I wouldn't even say the lobby. It was more of... Like where you check in a hotel because it's one of those old motels, roadside motels.
Yeah, and they had like a small arcade or something.
Yeah, like a little cafeteria and an arcade with a few video games and pinball machines. And so he was just playing like Asteroids or some type of old school video game. And the owner says, "We're closing up now. You gotta leave." And then Dean comes back to the hotel room and he sees the door. To the bedroom cracked open a little bit and something was feeding, and then all of a sudden that's when Papa Winchester breaks in and shoots the guy thing, but it breaks out the window and disappears, and they couldn't find it for 20-30 years. So it's this kind of like a special mission for Dean to clean up his own mess.
Yeah, because he definitely feels guilty that it got away, and you could see how he's suffering because there's like six kids or something now in the hospital, and they say it's all from pneumonia and how it spreads through just the kids in the family,
right?
And so I think he like, and then the little boy, at the motel, like there's the two brothers, so he sees himself in these two boys, mm-hmm. and then the little brother gets sick, and he's just like. I got to kill this thing, and I got to kill it now.
Right.
So I just feel like you could see how guilty he feels for letting this thing get away from when they were kids.
Yeah, because just thinking about that, if he would have done his job, there wouldn't have been all these other kids that are sick and dying now. And yeah, so that weighs on him quite a bit. And I can see that. I can definitely see that. So, yeah.
Well, and I think, too, it's like... Well, I mean, in a sense, I feel like, okay, but if he had stayed with Sammy when they were, he didn't go to the arcade, would his dad have come back? Would that thing even have fed on Sam?
Right.
So that's like,
yeah, that's like a very good point.
Possibilities in my head, too.
That's a very good point, too. That is very good. I think,
go ahead.
No, I was just saying, that's a very good point, because, yeah, if the two kids are there and one's awake, and, yeah, there's probably a less likelihood that it would, it would have just moved on, and they still wouldn't have caught the thing anyway. But I think the Papa Winchester was just really upset at Dean. As you could see, he was like, Sammy was okay. He's like, I told you never to leave this room. You can keep the door locked at all times. So,
yeah. But even though it's like that thing comes through the window anyways. Yeah. So I feel like, Dean feels so guilty.
Yeah.
And he, like, really puts this pressure on himself, but you never know what could have happened.
Oh, for sure.
I think as a mother, that's my feeling of the things, is, like, you don't know what would have happened. So, I mean, and of course, I'm not out there hunting monsters, I'm just raising children.
Right.
Which can be monsters.
That is very true. That is very true. There is one scene that I really thought was hilarious, when they were going into the hotel, not the hotel, the hospital, and they were interviewing the doctor, Dr. Aaron Heidecker,
yeah.
And they run across the elderly patient that's in the room, and there's a cross that's an inverted cross, and they're like, an inverted cross is a sure sign of demonic possession. Let's go in there and let's take care of her. Let's find out. Let's get her. Let's kill her. Let's take care of the Striga. And she's sitting there in the wheelchair and she looks like she's sleeping, she doesn't. She looks like she's sleeping, but she's like, she makes the sound, I'm slipping my peepers open.
I know, right?
And
that's like one of the best ones. And then they kind of like say that again at the end of the episode.
Right. Well, when Sam, the next morning, when Sam's like, I can't believe you almost burned a clip in that old lady. I'm slipping my peepers open. I told you to fix that cross. It's been upside down for 2 weeks. And all Dean does is turn it and turn it upside or turn it right side up.
I know. And they like out. It was funny because they both had it was like this intense foreboding thing when he first walked past the room, and you really think like, okay, what part does this lady play? And right. then they're like, they're just there with the, you know, their pistols on her, and they, and she's just like, burr, 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 burr.
Yeah.
You know, it's the cranky old lady.
Yeah. And wasn't this the episode where Dean gives Sam the fake ID, but it says female body inspector?
Yeah, bikini inspector.
Bikini inspector.
Yeah.
It's like,
I told you it would work.
He goes, this is going to work. We're gonna get busted right the first time out.
I know, right? It's all about confidence. It's all about confidence.
And he's holding his thumb over the ID.
Right.
Oh gosh, but yeah, it turns out the good old Dr. Aaron Heidecker, and Sam sees him throughout like the many decades.
Yeah, because he did all that research on the old microfilm, I think.
The microfiche?
The microfiche, yes, thank you, at the library, and he's going through, and he's like, oh my gosh, an 18 this, and a this, and then he finds this picture while he's on the phone with Dean, and he's like, oh, I've got this picture of Heidecker, but it was taken, like, in, I don't know what he said, it was 18-something.
Yeah, he would have been over 100 years old.
Yeah,
because it feeds every, what, like 20 or 30 years or something like that?
Yeah, 1883 is what he said.
Okay.
And then I'm thinking, I'm like, okay, well, that was just about the time that film was really, like, photography was really coming into play. So I was kind of surprised at that, but
yeah,
I just did a photography thing with a bunch of fifth graders, so that's how I know that. But it was like, okay, 1883... There's just with the photography and the pictures, and it's in the newspaper.
Yeah.
I don't know how, like, realistic that is, but I still went for it. Like, I think most people would be like, yeah, sure, why not?
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. You know, hey, anything could be, anything's possible. I mean, honestly, they did have the printing presses back in the day, and they did have the flash, like the old school flash photography. If you even watch, I remember watching episodes of Deadwood, and they had their own like little Pioneer press out there. So it's very possible.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, anything,
especially in like a more populated area.
Yeah, yeah. When this is what takes place in Wisconsin, so yeah, sure, let's go with it. Oh, no, actually,
Wisconsin's happening.
Although we don't know if it happened. Well, it would have to be in Wisconsin. It would be the local newspaper. So yeah, never mind. It's not like that global or all they would have back in those days is the local newspaper. Never mind. Oh right. God, brain fart.
It was like town, because they were going town to town, like in Wisconsin.
Right. Yeah.
Like, kind of made his way around the state, I believe.
It's the local Gazette, yo.
Yeah. Right.
Oh, so
yeah.
So yeah. So they talked to the I think it was Asher or no, it was Michael. Michael Asher was the younger Michael. Brother. Michael. So they talked to the older brother Michael, and they convinced Michael to be bait. And Michael is a little bit apprehensive at first, but then if it saves Asher, he'd do anything to save his little brother. So he sure says, sure, why not? Right. And they
because he didn't like they can't promise him that Asher will get better. But if there's a chance, he's going to do it, you know?
Correct. Because this is all just hypothetical at this point. but yeah, so they, so Michael agrees to be the bait. The boys are successful in, obviously, in killing the Striga. And all the kids return back to normal, the ones that haven't passed away already. And then, though, ironically, the good doctor must have been sick because he didn't go into work that day. If you remember that part,
yeah, right.
So
no, and I like my one thing was like the get me was when he's over Michael and he's like feeding, and so they unload the clip into him, and then he's on the ground and Dean's like impressed with himself, you know, and then like jumps up and it starts like they start fighting it and. and then the Striga kind of like jumps on a Sam and starts like kind of feeding on him like a Dementor. This is very like Harry Potter. So I don't know if J.K. Rowling was like, hey, Supernatural fan. But yeah, this is like has that Dementor feel. Mm. And he starts sucking Sam's life force when, you know, Dean starts shooting the shit out of him then. Mm-hmm. So.
Yes. Yeah. Oh,
I just like that little like, hey, we're done. We're, you know, we're so proud of ourselves. And then guess what, bitches?
Not yet. But
psych.
But I'm sorry. Getting back to almost the beginning of the episode, what I really loved is how much of a little smartass that Michael's character is, and he's checking Dean, and he's like, and he sees Dean and Sam. He's like, yeah, two queens. He goes, I bet.
He's like.
Oh,
right, that's really good.
Like, oh man. And you could see that Dean is a little peeved, but also kind of like impressed.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, I really thought that was hilarious.
I know. I'm like, if you, that's like Dean as a kid.
Oh, exactly.
Hard ass, you know.
Which then is, you know, is followed by all the flashbacks of Dean and Sam,
right?
At similar hotels.
That was a good line.
Yeah,
that was a good line.
So, I mean, I checking Internet Movie Database, this episode is actually ranked a tad higher than Hell House. This is ranked 8.7 out of 10 stars. Really? Yeah. And my final feelings on this is I give it a thumbs up. I liked it. But there are other episodes, very shortly they're coming up, that I think are so much better. Oh, we're going to talk about those very shortly. Definitely. Yes, but I really don't have anything else to add to the this episode. Do you have any like closing comments for this episode?
No, I mean it's not like I said, it's not terrible, but it was amazing. It was okay.
Yeah, it was a standard.
So I mean, I give it a thumbs up, but
yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah, I mean, if it's on TV, I'm not going to flip past it like Route 666, or you know, it's not one of those things where I'll pass over it. Route 666.
I'll be happy never watching that episode again.
Yeah, I can't wait not to ever watch that episode.
I'm done. I'm like, oh, kids, we're gonna watch this, not this one. We're skipping it.
Or Bugs or Bloodlines. Those are my Bugs. Those are basically, you know, those are only the three episodes that I want to say that I really don't like. all the rest of them are even the kind of the forgettable ones are actually pretty good. But those three, again, Route 666, Bugs, and Bloodlines, not good.
What was Bloodlines again?
Bloodlines was going to be the spinoff of the Chicago Families, the monsters, and where Sam and Dean only make an appearance at the beginning, at the end of the episode. Do you remember that? It was like the vampires versus werewolves, kind of like mafia families.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, like I said, it's a turd. It's a big turd. I even like the episode. I even like the episode with the girls where they were supposed to do the Wayward Sisters episode. I really thought that was a great back end story to back into a pilot for them or a series for them. And unfortunately, that didn't happen. But honestly, we're skipping about 10 years ahead of schedule right now, or 12 years.
Yeah, sorry.
So
don't tell anybody.
Yeah. Well, it's a retrospective podcast. We can kind of bounce around. We're going to do the episodes in order, but we can talk about you know old newer episodes.
Yeah, we won't give any spoilers away.
Not yet, anyway.
No spoilers. Yeah.
No spoilers in a retrospective podcast, right?
Yeah. Well, we don't know. Like somebody could be like watching along who hasn't seen it. Like I have friends who haven't seen it, and they're like, I can't commit to 14 seasons. It's like I'm watching something else. I can't do it. I'm like, shut up and just watch it already.
Yeah.
And listen to my podcast, you jerk.
Yes. Oh. Bitches, anyways, listen to our podcast.
Bunch of bitches. Do what you're supposed to do. Live life to the fullest and watch Supernatural.
Live on the edge.
I know, right?
So, yeah, that's all I have. I mean, I have some more classic music that was used in the episode, thanks to the fine people at TuneFind.com. Four more. Rock Bottom by UFO. Ruby, So Cute, So Creepy by Jay Gruzga. Road to Nowhere by Ozzy Osbourne. And then this one was just used in the next Netflix version called Another Day of Regret by Molly. And it was played at the end of the episode, and they hit the road again. And I believe Road to Nowhere is playing at the end of the episode if you own like the Blu-rays and the DVDs. So those are the four songs used in that episode. I have four more fun facts for Something Wicked. Number one, Black River Falls and its township, Brockway, Wisconsin, are real places. Black River Falls had an outburst of deaths in the 1890s. There is a documentary about the disaster called Wisconsin Death Trip from 1999, based on the book by Michael Leslie from 1973. Both the book and the movie are constructed entirely from actual news reports. So that's kind of interesting.
That is. Maybe I'll check that out.
Yeah. Number two, the title is based on a Shakespeare's... I'm sorry. Number two, the title is based on a Shakespeare's play, Macbeth, with the line, "Toil and trouble, fire burns and cauldrons bubble. By the pricking of my thumb, something wicked comes this way." All right. not a big Shakespeare fan, but okay.
Classed up with some Shakespeare.
Yeah. Woohoo. Number three, the hospital room 237 where Sam and Dean visit the old woman with the upside-down cross is the same room number as the crazy dead lady in the movie version of The Shining. You know, I've seen The Shining probably about a dozen times. I didn't put those two and two together.
No, me neither.
Yeah, but cool nonetheless. Number four, even though Fitchburg, Wisconsin, where the episode is set, is a real place, Fort Douglas, Wisconsin, where the flashbacks are set, does not actually exist. However, both Fort McCoy and Camp Douglas are located very close to each other Both Fort McCoy and Camp Douglas are located very close to each other and are often mistaken for each other by civilians and non-locals. So those are my four fun facts for Something Wicked. So I give this a thumbs up. I don't have anything else really to say. How about you, Katie?
No. Thumbs up.
All
Decent, but not great.
Decent, but not great. That's a ringing endorsement. So please watch these episodes. So on Next Men of Letters, Katie and I will be covering Providence and Dead Man's Blood, episode 19 and 20. Boys and girls, we are coming to the end of season one very quickly. So please tune in to next month's episode where we discuss Providence and Dead Man's Blood. So for Katie, I'm Tim Kasda. Thank you for listening to Men of Letters, and we will catch you on the flip-flop. Good night! Thanks for tuning in to Men of Letters over at the Speakeasy Podcast Network, where talk is cheap and so are we. You can follow the Speakeasy Podcast Network over on the Facebook. Just type in the Speakeasy Podcast Network in the search bar and we'll pop right up. Be sure to like the page to keep up with all the great shows that are on the Speakeasy Podcast Network. Also, if you would like to reach out and contact MOL, you can drop us a line over at our official email address at menoflettersupernatural@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. Also, the Speakeasy Podcast Network is on the Twitter machine over at the Speakeasy One. So be sure to check out the Speakeasy Podcast Network on Twitter. Thank you and have a great night.
Thank you for listening to Men of Letters.